Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I expected skeletons, but nothing on this grand a scale.
Everybody, this is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is season 4, episode 4. I can't find it. 404 joke. No, it's called Simply Shocking. Ooh, and now here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Buttag.
Oh, so much poor taste already.
I am disgusted yellow. hi, guys.
Hi. Before we get into this horribly named episode, we do want to tell you what's coming up this week on our Patreon bonus episode. That will be again with this episode 56, dropping July 16th. Let's read Teen Comics : Melrose Place.
You okay there?
Yeah, I had my cuticle cutter down on top of the cover. I was picking it up to read the title and it fell on the floor. This is a gift Ms. Sarah D. Bunting gave me. I can't remember if it was for my birthday or Christmas. It did not get into my library, which it basically now is of like Melrose and 90210 people on magazines, because I put it in with my filing. And as Sarah well knows, this is something I do tight twice a year, whether I need to or not. And so this got mislaid in my in tray until very recently. And then I dug it out and was like, oh, shit, we have to talk about this on the Patreon. And oh, my God. You are in for something. This is one of the weirdest books I've ever read. I have 5 million questions about it. So,
yeah. One of those questions is, I can report, when was Treat Williams on Melrose Place? So that should give you some insight into how accurate the art is.
Yeah. We're going to give you visual aids for this as well, because this is, as I said before we started recording, sub fan art quality. That's a diss on fan art. Fan art is often great. This is like a bad fan art Twitter account. That's where all of these should go. Anyway, you're going to want to hear us talk about this. So please go to patreon.com/againwiththis to join us. Any level of support will get you those 4 bonus episodes every single month. Now, Simply Shocking.
Guys,
we'll get to it. Starting with our D plot. That's not where the Simply Shocking thing is. Joe's not so sure about Jake's involvement with Shelley. At Jake's place, the day after we last saw him, Joe asks what happened to the date they were going to go on and who's in his shower, and he explains it's Shelley and who she is, which, in case you forgot from my last episode, she's Jess's ex-wife. Shelly was upset when he told her the news about Jess, so she stayed over. Shelly also thought she and Jess were going to get back together, apparently. And considering that Joe is Jess's other ex, she is bizarrely acting like this. All of this barely has anything to do with her. Like, she has weirdly no reaction to that other than being jealous of Jake.
Also, like, Jake was pouring wine, so presumably Joe is, like, en route to the apartment. So how did she not hear about any of this until the next day?
Great question.
I mean, I guess the phone lines are still down after the explosion. But then on top of that, it's like, Jake, you leave Shelly there. Go ask Matt to bunk with Shelly for a couple of days. And you live with Joe.
Yes.
Because you're already boning. Problem solved. Oh, that's right. This is a soap opera.
Those are all great notes. Jake also
wrote this down. There was like a little map of the complex that I was like, so who lives with who? If Veronica is sitting next to William, and then I got a perfect score on my GRE. AMA.
So Jake also has not told Shelley how Jess died yet. Joe thinks that Jake can just say it was an accident and it should be easy for him to keep it a secret. And then Shelley comes out in a towel and Joe is cold to her before heading out to work. So later, Jake brings Shelly in her long plaid skirt and Nike Cortezes and a jean jacket. Zero notes on this outfit. It's great. Mm-hmm.
Wore a variation on that last week and felt pretty smug about seeing it again.
So that's what she's wearing to see Jess's grave, which already exists and has a stone. Again, not how that works. We learn sure. Jess was writing letters to Shelly the whole time he was dating Joe. And then Jake tells Shelly how Jess actually died and that he feels responsible. But Shelly knows better than anyone what Jess was capable of. This is where I finally looked up Heidi Leck, or Leck possibly, mm-hmm. who plays Shelly, and realized I know her from the Sonny Von Bulow episode of Law & Order. Do you remember that sure. one with Angry McPhee as mm-hmm. Klaus?
Absolutely.
Yeah. If I recall correctly, she was a brunette then, and she was playing a model who was Klaus's side piece.
Mm-hmm. I think her SAG name is Hudson.
Uh-huh.
Hudson Lake or Leak.
Right.
And as an actor, she's a model.
Mm-hmm.
But unless she was doing all modeling for, like, Dr. Scholl's shoe inserts, like, she always looks like something smells really bad.
She does.
And something does. And it's her acting, in case I wasn't clear. She's bad at it.
Well, crafted.
Hope she went to grad school. Take care.
So then Joe arrives at Shooters and finds good old Shelly in her stink face behind the counter. Because, surprise, she's working there now as a bookkeeper. And Jake remembers that Joe has a big fashion show that night, which we will get to. But Joe just wanted to see him first, which, like, no. You don't have time to pop anywhere on your way to anywhere. You have to be at the venue all day getting all your fucking lights set up. What the fuck? But whatever. Richard is right. She is a poor replacement for his photographer that we never met. But anyway, away from Shelly, Joe expresses concern that, A, Shelly has wormed her way in. Also, why would Shelly want to work for Jake? Joe wonders, given everything. And Jake says Shelly needed a break, which Joe remembers was also Jake's line on Jess. True. To be continued.
Great.
On to the C plot. Things are going just great for Jane and Richard. That's sarcasm. They're not. Richard appears just as Elliot, a guy from the bank, is getting ready to leave, unconcerned about Richard's absence since Jane was such a great hostess. Elliot says they should have a great show and that line of credit will be theirs, which it was unclear to me at this point whether the line was credit was contingent on the show going well, but we will later find out it was. So note that. When Elliot's gone, Richard snits that once again all the credit is going to Jane, but takes off before she can respond. This is also where you see Jane is holding a pregnancy-concealing folder. I'm not going to note any more of these instances, since as far as I can tell, this ended in a pregnancy loss in 1996, but there
are
a lot of her shot from, like, the top of the boobs up only.
And a lot more black than this character usually wears, which
yes.
could be part of the heel turn, but there's also, like, a umpire waist is implied. Oh, wait.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that sucks.
Yes. So Jane follows and tries to canoodle in Richard's office, who says he sometimes wonders whether Jane snowed him the way she just snowed Elliot. She shrugs that off, telling Richard she loves him, which it's been like 3 weeks, and his wife was alive during part of that, or ex-wife, mm-hmm. or estranged wife, or whatever. But, like, it's been 3 weeks. Back up.
Yeah. Calm. Everyone calm down.
Well, it turns out Richard is also an imbecile because he's got an engagement ring in his jacket and uses it to propose. She accepts. Two nitwits in love. For now, because immediately, Jane says maybe they should wait until after the show to make it official so that their engagement doesn't overshadow it. And, you know, they're together, just not at work. And Richard looks vaguely hurt, but he accepts that.
Or has gas. Hard to say.
And also, maybe he doesn't accept, because the next time we see Jane, she's storming into his office to yell at him for telling everyone in the office about them. And to me, he just seems like he's excited as he grins that he's bad at keeping secrets, but Jane is in no mood. Because, you know, the spring line! 5 exclamation marks. Richard doesn't know why this is such a big deal to Jane when Mackenzie's going to get all the credit anyway. Jane just wanted to be something other than some guy's wife or fiance, but after the show, she'll be in charge, not just of her designs, but of her life. Richard.
She was
not
a failure all by herself. I don't know what she's talking about.
It's true. Richard doesn't intend to get in her way, unlike the other men she's been with, which, like, he's a little like Chris, other than the fact that he's walking around in the open and successful. But anyway, Jane claims
Chris was very successful, Tara. He's eluded capture.
True. You're right. I apologize to Chris. So then it's the fashion show with a lot of black stuff, considering it's the spring line. Oh, also, it's super ugly. I had to make GIFs of all of it. So they're all in the visual aids.
Oh, God. It's painful. Like, the punchline, the movie, principle, don't show the comedy.
Yes.
It's so, oh, God, it's awful. It's like things that were being parodied in Cher's Closet and Clueless. Like, it's, ugh. And then they're like, there's like a black and a white look paired with each, like models are paired with each runway walk. And it all just looks so cheap. Like, I'm trying to think of which mall store you might have found them in.
Yeah.
And then I could, I kept being like, no, that's insulting to Hot Topic is something that I wrote in my notes.
Yeah.
Don't show the designs, please.
Yeah. Remember when we talked about the February 91 or no, it was February 93, whichever one we talked about with Andrew Hsu on the cover that had all of the prom dress ads that all looked like reject Nolan Miller dresses from Dynasty from like 5 years earlier. This is what they look like. Like, they'll be black pleather with black feathers. It's like, everything is wrong. Everything is wrong.
Or like something that a TV character at a TV rave would wear, like just that sort of shiny, fake sequin, stretchy stuff that like you even think about lighting a match and you're dead of third degree burns. Like, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Don't show the designs. All the fashion know-how went to Models, Inc., and then after that exploded, they were like, forget it. Although, the looks on Models, Inc. were not great either. Anyway, Richard's in the middle of congratulating the models when Jane just walks right past him from backstage, ignoring him as he tries to get her to stop and getting on the cordless mic she has brought with her to say, clip two.
Thank you very much for that wonderful ovation. For those of you who don't know, my name is Jane Mancini, and though you won't find me in your program, I personally designed this line. In fact, Mackenzie Hart had nothing to do with the creation seen here tonight.
Good Amanda, Jane.
Picture.
What in God's name do you think you're doing? You just betrayed me and this whole company.
All I did was take credit for my work. I'm the new Mackenzie Hart, and I can't think of a better time or place to announce it.
And I can't think of a better time or place to announce this. You're fired.
I mean, she was just going to do that, what was the point of going through all the hassle of concealing Mackenzie's death?
Yeah.
Like.
Also, are you five?
Yeah.
Like, crowd. Mackenzie's on my side of the back seat. What what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, did she get fired for being too young to work somewhere? Like, it's, yeah. It's just crazy. And she's so smug. Like, and he grabs her arm, and I guess he shouldn't, but I did feel like that arm grab was justified this one time.
Yeah. I just don't understand how, because again, it's been like 3 weeks. Obviously, they're building on something Mackenzie did because you could not do it from scratch in that time. This is the Project Runway. Like, this is not how things work.
No. And also, why is he, I mean, in her slight defense, like, why is he even out on the runway? Like, he wasn't the designer.
No.
Or the designer either. He wasn't either.
Right. He would be in the audience. He wouldn't be backstage.
Yeah. He would be in the bar. And that's fine. He should be in the bar. His whatever just died.
Yeah. I bet he wishes he'd been in the bar. I'll tell you that. Anyway.
I wish I were in the bar.
We're almost done with this plot line, Sarah. The next day, he follows Allison's tip and finds Jane out running. He has heard she's already had an offer from Vera Wang. LOL.
I completely forgot that. Oh, Jesus. And apparently the emergency alert system is not happy about that oversight.
Is that an Amber Alert?
I think it's a... Jesus.
Your phone is telling you it's 5,000 degrees out.
Yeah. It's from Con Ed, apparently. Oh. Something melted on the grid.
Ooh. What?
All right, well, let's definitely hurry up and finish this then. So Richard thought Jane wanted to run her own company and has released a statement to the fashion press announcing Mackenzie's death and Jane's contributions to the company. He will pay her any salary she wants with full profit participation because turns out the bank's not going to give the company that line of credit if Jane isn't working there. And there it is. At least this makes sense. I mean, I don't know why Elliot was so enamored of her after meeting her once, but still, at least this is a reason for Richard to hire her back after all this bullshit.
And also, internet search does exist now, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the FBI that basically threw her entire physical space of her business in the garbage would like a word about how great she is with a credit line, but okay.
So Jane demands to be in charge creatively and financially, again, yikes, and to rename the company Mancini Hart. With a dash. He counters with Hart Mancini, even though Mancini Hart is a better name. Again,
yep.
Gotta put Mancini first because those are all the syllables. But she agrees and is starting to walk off when clip three.
One more piece of business, Jane. Our engagement.
One step at a time, Richard.
I mean, calling it a piece of business is rather telling. But anyway, good luck to you both, I guess.
Yeah. Ugh.
On to the B plot. Michael uses Sydney to try to drive Kimberly even crazier and gives Matt some actually good advice. Note Ray Matt, there's a clip with a very offensive slur in it in this plot line, so be warned. But, you know, it's to tell us something about another character and where he stands. And, you know, I think it was shocking for a reason, but we'll get to it.
Hmm.
An apprehensive-looking Michael comes to visit Kimberly in the new facility where she's being held in a sequence that is a straight knockoff of Clarice Starling's first visit to the mental hospital in Silence of the Lambs.
Hmm?
Marcia Cross has her hair all slicked back in a blue jumpsuit, doing her best Hannibal Lecter, which, to be frank, is pretty good. Clip four.
Yep.
Hello, Michael. What brings you to this little corner of hell? Certainly not sympathy.
I just wanted to see for myself that you're safely tucked away.
Yes, I'm very safe. Thank you. You, on the other hand, are a dead man.
So that's one inspiration. Then she yanks the sink off the wall and throws it through the glass, and that's another inspiration that was straight ripped off, of course, with mm-hmm. the Cuckoo's Nest. So she throws it through the glass that's separating them and starts stabbing him with a shard before he wakes up screaming in the on-call room at the hospital because it was all just a terrible nightmare. And he leaps out of bed to peel the masking tape with her name on it off her locker like, ooh.
That will exorcise the demon.
Muttering there's no way she's ever getting out. So the next day, Sydney meets Michael at the hospital with all the files on Kimberly that she got the hospital to release to her. And Peter comes up on the end of Michael spitting something rude about Kimberly rotting in a cell and tries to take control. Clip five.
Mancini, I thought I told you to stay the hell out of Kimberly's case. Are these mine?
Michael's. Figured you'd get your own.
Sydney, how many times do I have to say this to you? You work for both of us. Peter? You know, you're wasting your time with Kimberly. She's beyond medical help, beyond psychiatric help. Hell, she's beyond Lourdes.
Once a Catholic. Let that know.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But anyway, they fight over the files. Michael gets them. So then Calvin Hobbs was rolling up behind them, making sure his pleasantries about their booming surgical practice also include this, and this is the clip with the slur. Here we go. Clip six.
Wish things were running as smoothly around here. At least that Matt Fielding mess is behind me.
I heard he was cleared.
Yeah, well, I still fired the little faggot. Board meeting in 5 minutes. Carry on, gentlemen.
That bigoted bastard should watch his mouth, or he'll end up in some serious legal trouble. Could even lose his job.
I suggest you watch yours, or we could both lose ours. Capisce?
Who's the Italian here? But anyway, yeah, wow. Did not expect Michael to be more of an ally than Peter, and of course, he has an ulterior motive. But still, what the fuck, Peter?
Yeah. Also, what the fuck, show?
Yeah.
Please find a different plot for Matt, please. Spoiler, they won't.
No. So at Shooters that night, Michael catches up with an extremely drunk and bleary-eyed Matt to say that Hobbs fired him because he's a homophobe and that Matt can and should sue him. And Matt is not too drunk to ask what Michael thinks his cut should be of his settlement, but Michael's passing on the info free of charge because, with Hobbs out of the way, Michael will have a shot at chief of staff. And Matt!
What?
Clip seven.
The ulterior motive rears its ugly head. Forget it, Michael. I'm not in the sue business. I'm not in the revenge business. I just want to forget and move on.
It's a gorgeous drunk laugh from Doug
Savant. That's so good. Well done. Yep. Love it.
So, do we want to talk about whether Michael is right that he's going to be on path to chief of staff? I mean, he is because it's a soap and he's in the opening credits cast, but still, like, aren't there probably dozens, if not hundreds, of other doctors that work at this hospital and have not been in legal trouble every season?
Probably, but I think Michael's plan probably involves some kind of leveraging of this information.
Oh, of course, yes.
To get set up before Matt sues and gets his payday, so.
True. Good point.
I mean, you know, that Michael is even alive is ridiculous.
It's true.
Someone would have killed his annoying ass long ago.
They do keep trying, you know?
That's true. It's like a Weeble.
Rasputini. Meanwhile, Michael's wife is in her cell picking at her dinner while Schmob tells her he's the only one she can trust. But this time she calls him Henry, throws her jello at him in the mirror, which turns out is, of course, a two-way mirror through which Peter and some orderlies are watching her. Like, is Peter just always there? Like,
yeah, what the hell?
What about your practice? Anyway, when she starts flailing around and screaming, they rush in to sedate her and put her in a wheelchair, rolling her into another room for electroconvulsive treatment, which is why the title of this episode is simply shocking. Guys.
No.
Dave.
No.
This is a method of treatment still in practice. It sure looks unpleasant on the show, but as I said in the visual aids, I bet Marcia Cross really enjoyed playing it.
Yeah. I mean, talk about straight out of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Like, right? I think this is basically not how it's done anymore, but...
No, and wasn't in the 90s even.
No, I don't think so.
Anywho. At the office the next day, Sydney quizzes Peter on why he would want to save a monster like Kimberly, recounting all the times, across multiple seasons, by the way, that Kimberly has targeted Sydney personally. But Peter knows what Kimberly's going through and doesn't want to see it happen again, and Sydney obviously wonders what that means, so he eventually tells her, clip eight.
I had a sister. She ended up in a similar situation, locked away. Only at the time, I couldn't do anything about it.
I didn't know you had a family.
I don't. It died with her. Now, I want you to forget what I just said and stay out of my personal business.
And to be fair, she doesn't agree to that. And as soon as he's gone, she gets on the phone to tell all of this to Michael, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess this makes sense for why Peter's been going so hard for Kimberly, but... I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like he's lying all the time based on Jack Wagner's delivery. So
right. I guess
we'll find out. I don't remember.
Well, and also he was trying, well, whatever. I was going to say he was trying to help her before he realized like how far gone she was. So like what exactly was his sister's problem anyway, that he was taking it personally with Kimberly anyway.
Or he's trying to like insulate himself from accusations that he drove her to the point of blowing the complex up. Like we know that's not true, but
yeah,
I don't know. I don't think we're supposed to think that though.
All right. Yeah, I accept that. So then Matt is playing pool at Shooters when a guy comes up to him. He is Tom Riley from the LA office of the Gay and Lesbian Rights Coalition, and he wants to offer Matt their free legal services. And yes, Matt did call Tom and offer to testify if the matter goes to trial. Clip 9.
Just so you know, Michael Mancini's motives are anything but altruistic.
We don't care. We'll win a case any way we have to.
Right, and it's my duty as a gay man to come forward and fight this terrible injustice.
Why wouldn't you want to?
Maybe because I am tired of labels like gay man. You know what? I never signed anything anywhere ever that said I had to be a zealot or an activist or even that I had to give a damn. And right now, I'm at a point where I just want to be left alone.
Listen to your better face, Matt. You are part of a group. And rather you like it or not, you have a responsibility to that group to fight for them the way they're willing to fight for you. And if you don't, well, in my book, that makes you but a bigot coward as Dr. Hobbs.
Interesting accent.
Yeah, I see both sides of this. I mean, I feel like Matt's argument should have been like, Hobbs is bad, but Michael is worse, you know? I mean, not in terms of the homophobia, but that he wouldn't want to do anything with smooth Michael's path to possibly getting to be chief of staff, like... Michael should be in charge.
And also that using Michael to these ends would not be effective because everybody knows he's Michael?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tom gives Matt his card and leaves. At the beach house, Sydney and Michael drink grappa and marvel over Peter's tragic past. Michael mentions grappa's supposed aphrodisiac properties and Sydney puts him off, but not with much conviction, as you might expect. Sometimes she feels like a ball, she says, bouncing from relationship to relationship and scheme to scheme, with Michael the only constant. And canoodling ensues, but then she's like, what about the plan? And he says, this is the plan, and carries her off to bed. Love these two together.
Yeah. He's also not lying for once.
Right.
She chooses to interpret it in a way that is favorable to them both, but he's not lying.
Sure. Sure thing. According to the B-roll, Kimberly's in the regular-ass county jail that we've seen many times when a nurse comes to let her visitors in. It's Sydney and Michael looking very snugly. And Sydney falsely compliments Kimberly on her radiance. She thought only Michael could put that kind of color in a woman's cheeks. And when they start making out in front of her, Kimberly hides her face and whimpers at them to stay away. And Sydney delights in telling Kimberly they're a couple again. And, of course, Kimberly starts screaming and then cowers behind the bed frame. And Peter, once again, is on site and runs in to try to calm her down and then yells at Michael and Sydney for getting her all riled up. And Michael says they're just trying to make sure she stays incarcerated. And then Matt meets Tom at Shooters again. He changes his mind. He is going to sue. And then Sydney's at the beach house trying to celebrate their victory with a new black teddy. But Michael tells her in so many words to get lost. Somehow Sydney did not see this coming, so Michael has to explain how and why he used her. He wouldn't be able to manipulate Kimberly the way he did if she did not see real love in Sydney's eyes. And Sydney, clip 10.
Oh, God. I haven't learned anything, have I?
Apparently not.
Love it.
It's so good.
Then he puts headphones on and is like, beat it.
He like
makes scram motions,
flicks his fingers like, bye-bye. You can see that so in the visual funny. Aids because that may be a gif you need to save for your own purposes.
Yeah.
The next day, Peter's trying to teach Michael how to transfer calls when Sydney rolls in with an empty banker's box. Neither of them seems to notice as they berate her for being late. So she gets to tell them they're going to have to get used to it because she's quitting. And Michael doesn't care, but Peter would like her to stay. Clip 11.
I would think after that fiasco at the sanitarium.
No. You were under the influence of a very evil man. And I'm sure that you were an unwilling participant. Now, it was Michael's idea, right? To drive Kimberly crazy. That's probably why you're quitting, too.
I had no idea what he was up to until it was too late. By the way, how is Kimberly?
It's a minor setback. So, Sid, how does an extra $100 a week sound to you? To stay. I'll pay you out of my own pocket, under the table.
No doubt you'll expect extra services in exchange.
Well, now she's learned something. That's progress.
Mm-hmm.
But as she tries to leave, Peter stops her with a waist grab, mixing it up, and says all he wants is for her to spy on Michael. So she's in. That's where we leave it for these two. Finally, our A plot. Brooke uses Amanda's scandalous past to her own advantage, and Billy gets wise to Allison's big secret. Believe it or not, he does. With an assist from Brooke. Once again, it's that fucking B-roll. Milkman, jogger, patio umbrella.
Oh my God, it goes on so long. That milk is sour cream by now, guys.
Truly. Before we head into Billy's apartment, where he wakes up to the sound of Brooke on the phone, quietly making travel arrangements for a one-day trip to Miami, she's holding a photocopy of Amanda's Florida driver's license so we're all on the same page, and then acts natural when she sees that Billy heard the salient details and claims she was going to surprise him. She's going to Florida to check out an amazing investment opportunity, and he's like, I don't care, it's your money. In her office, Amanda's looking for a particular document, and Allison gleefully tells her where it is. And when Amanda wants to know how that's possible, Allison says her vision is returning ahead of schedule, which was there one? Anyway, Amanda, clip 12.
And you're not telling anyone? If this is some kind of play for sympathy.
Not to worry, I am telling everyone as soon as some personal issues are resolved.
Oh, in other words, once you've snared Billy again.
It's nothing that nefarious. I'm staying blind until Billy opens his eyes, so to speak.
Well, not that it's anything I approve of or would ever try myself, but good luck.
Love that.
Yep. I love it, too. Yeah,
it's not my play, but good luck.
Yep.
Sure.
So then Allison tells Amanda what she saw Brooke doing the other night, and before Allison can even finish the sentence, Amanda has stormed out to the bullpen to confront Brooke about going into her personal files. And Brooke denies that she was anywhere near them, and Amanda won't say who narked, but adds that she's going to be watching Brooke. And then Allison comes out, and she's, like, feeling the air. It's very funny. I hope Courtney Thorne Smith really had fun doing this. Like,
Yeah. There are a couple of instances in which she seems to be almost laughing, which is great. Yep. Love it.
So the next day, Billy and Allison sit by the pool, Billy reading aloud from the paper, cheerful stories only, and Brooke comes down to confirm with relish Allison's suspicion that there are actually tons of downbeat stories that Billy is skipping, so Allison excuses herself, whereupon Brooke asks whether Billy's noticed that Allison has lost some of her tentativeness lately. Wouldn't it be wild if her vision were returning? And Billy wants to know if it were, why she wouldn't tell them. Brooke suggests she's playing on the sympathies of an old boyfriend, but then kisses him before it can turn into a fight and leaves for the airport. And when we see her again, she's in Miami reviewing microfiche. It takes me back to my days at the public library. Does not seem to take her long to find a wedding announcement in the paper, which weirdly does not mention the bride's previous last name in the headline. It says, like, Amanda and Jack Parisi exchanged vows. Like, that's not how wedding announcements work.
No. I mean, maybe this had something to do with Palmering. Right. Who knows?
Perhaps. Yeah, that's true. We might find that.
We're going to have to do the retconning because the show is not all that interested in doing it. Just FYI.
So next we see Brooke at this Jack Parisi's house pretending her car broke down and asking to use his phone. And he is played by Antonio Sabato Jr., unfortunately, because he's a lunatic now. But anyway, he lets her in and she babbles that there's nothing like his house in L.A. where she's from. Like, there definitely is, but okay. And when he walks her over to the phone, she is agog at a gigantic oil painting of Amanda. This thing is so demented. If anyone within the sound of my voice knows where this prop is, I want it. I want it for my own.
I mean, I started calling it Pie-O-Manda because it just reminded me of that pie of my portrait that Paulie had like painted so that Tony looked like George Washington, that I was just like, oh yeah, someone should make that into a wallpaper.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
I mean, I want it on my wall. I want it on a t-shirt. I want it on a hat. It's incredible. I want stickers, like stick on strangers' cars. Yep. They won't be mad because it's that good. Obviously,
no,
it's the
visual. They won't.
So Brooke asks if that's Jack's wife, and he says she was. Amanda died 5 years ago, and then is like, well, here's the phone. And while she's on it, he goes into her unattended purse. Brooke, come on now. And gets out one of her business cards, which says she's Brooke Campbell, even though the wedding was like 10 days ago. Mm-hmm. And while Brooke is pretending to be on the phone, she inspects a wedding photo of Amanda, which is one of the better dresses we've seen.
Yeah, for sure. Not that that's saying much. Low bar, but yeah, definitely better.
Also in the visual aids. So back in L.A. that night, Billy comes over to see Allison and help her with work by describing layouts so that she can write copy for them. And she says she's getting really good at visualization. While she works on material, he tests whether she can see by making stupid faces at her in her peripheral vision. There are gifs of this regrettable stuff in the visual aids. I'm sorry, / you're welcome. Oh. And when this somehow makes her laugh, the jig is up. Clip 13.
Brooke is right, you can see.
All right, I can see. But it just came back, and I was going to tell you.
But you figured, what the heck, I'll just lie to him for a little longer.
Billy, it was never really a lie. It was a medical thing. I didn't know when or if I was going to get my sight back. And then I was enjoying our time together so much. It was like it used to be, and I like that.
Allison, our relationship is over. I married Brooke. Why do I have to keep saying this?
Well, if it's to remind me, don't bother. But if it's to remind yourself, well.
Don't lie to me again, okay?
I wonder if you've ever said that to Brooke. I mean, I may have been a little dishonest, but how honest has she been? Are you gonna tell me that someone like Brooke doesn't keep secrets? I didn't think so.
Really? I mean, yeah, like, fall off the ball. Like, this is not the play right now, but all right.
Yeah. So Brooke comes straight from the airport to the office, where she starts draping her plain stink all over Billy, who politely asks how the trip and investment were. I'm sorry, I can't stand seeing people come. Like, maybe it's just me. I sweat on the plane. I just feel disgusting whenever I get off the plane.
Yeah, I just feel like there's other people's skin cells. Yeah.
It's like a film.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. She has no such compunction, calls the trip a windfall beyond her wildest dreams, and she's on her way to confront Amanda about it when she runs into Allison and totally steals her moment of joy, revealing her restored eyesight by guessing before Allison can say anything, which is kind of great because she walks on and Allison's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Anyway, in her office, Amanda and her bizarre shiny silver suit are annoyed that Brooke has let herself in without knocking. And Brooke ignores that and launches right in. She expected skeletons, but nothing like this. Clip 14.
Faking your own death to get out of a marriage. Changing your name, changing your whole identity. Only you could pull off something this wild.
Those were my personal files!
I'm willing to respect that if you'll just let go of me! Amanda! Come on, you're hurting me!
I met Jack, by the way. Lovely guy.
Did you tell him? Did you tell him I'm still alive?
Of course not. What good would that do either one of us? I'm with you, Amanda. A secret this big deserves to stay a secret.
Brooke, you don't understand.
I see what happened.
You got married too young. It didn't work out.
No, you are way in over your head. This man comes from a dangerous family. He's violent. He's abusive. I went to great lengths.
Yes. Boating accident. Very clever. Did you know they dredged that swamp for 3 weeks? Now I know why we never do business with anyone in Miami.
Bless Kristen Davis. This heel turn doesn't totally work for me, but she's doing great.
She is. So, but did she change her name? Because yeah. We know she was Amanda when she was a kid, and her dad was Palmer Woodward. So wouldn't Jack have known her maiden name, which she is still using?
Yeah, this is kind of what I'm talking about.
Okay. So Amanda gasps at Brooke to name her terms, and Brooke says that would be blackmail. But she does have a list at the ready, which she leaves in Amanda's hands as she struts out. And when we next see the D&D Brain Trust, we find out what Brooke wanted. Not that it's a huge surprise. Clip 15.
In light of recent events, I've done some restructuring. Allison, effective immediately, Brooke will be taking over your duties. If you think this is a demotion, you're correct, although your salary will remain the same. Brooke, however, is being approved for a merit raise, and I'm putting her in the corner office.
Amanda, I don't understand. What did I do?
These decisions are final. I would suggest not arguing them. Good night, everyone.
Well, you won't hear me arguing.
Meanwhile, Andrew Shue making faces completely not appropriate to the situation.
Not remotely at all. Yeah. So while Brooke sits there preening next to Billy's dumb pants, Allison takes off after Amanda to try to get her to confirm that Brooke is blackmailing Amanda with something she found in her personal stuff. And instead of answering that, Amanda tells her never to mention those files again and to quit questioning Amanda's decisions unless she wants to end up even more screwed over than she is right now. Clip 16.
You can kiss the nice Amanda farewell. I'm back, Allison. Vengeance. Isn't it amazing? You open yourself up, try to be human, someone punches you in the gut.
Okay, listen. None of this would be happening if you didn't keep your extremely personal, somewhat incriminating shit in a safe at your home.
Yeah.
Like, yes, that file drawer was locked. But the key was taped to a piece of furniture inside the office.
And those are very easy to pick. Trust me.
Yes. This is like, oh, no, someone broke into my email just because I had my password on a post-it on my monitor. Like, this is partly on you.
Yeah, it is.
So the next day, Billy and Allison watch Brooke move into her new office and complain that it's not them. And Billy clarifies that he's proud of Brooke, but doesn't know how she pulled it off. And I guess her demotion means that Allison has time to get involved in other people's shit. Clip 17.
Something to do with her trip to Miami. The day before she left, she and Amanda were at each other's throats. Then, when she gets back, one meeting with Amanda, and Amanda is handing her the keys to the executive washroom. Plus, I spotted her going through Amanda's files. This whole thing stinks of some kind of blackmail.
That's enough.
Got a better theory?
Maybe she earned it. Maybe Amanda's impressed by her ambition and skill.
What skill? Knowing where all the best boutiques are?
I'm warning you.
Don't BS me, Billy. You know she's up to something, too. You also know that you could find out what a lot quicker than any of the rest of us.
You want me to investigate my own wife? None of my business or yours.
I got my butt kicked, Billy. Demoted. It's more my business than anybody else's.
Great. Now that you can see again, you look into it.
What a dick.
Yeah. I mean, you're the one who started this conversation, like, speculating about what Brooke was doing. So if you're not actually interested, don't talk about it to someone that you don't trust.
Also, the internet now exists. Everybody get on the stick. Thank you.
Yeah.
.com.
Cut to Amanda's office where she's shredding up some shit real nice, including a photocopy of her driver's license, which, as I recall, the physical driver's license was in that file, so maybe shred that too, just saying.
Yeah.
And then we're at the airport, where a flight has just arrived from Miami, and Jack Parisi disembarks and meets his nosy driver, clip 18.
Will you be staying in Los Angeles long?
Not sure. All depends what I can find here.
Done!
Don't you have people to do that? Sir?
Right. People that don't know what you look like. Like, send someone that Amanda's never met.
Yeah. Also, why would you give, if you're like from a gangster family, spoiler, I guess, like what? Nobody's going to be standing there in the airport with your name on a card.
No. It's going to be someone from the LA branch of the family. But that is where we leave things for now. So let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. I guess Brooke. I think Brooke.
I mean, she pulled a like Carl Bernstein. She went to Miami. She got the dirt.
She
came home. She got a promotion. She fucked over Allison. Pretty good day at the office and out of the office, actually.
Mm-hmm. True.
Mm-hmm.
Least valuable player. Richard, stick on your decisions. You were right about Jane. She sucks.
Yeah, she does. Also, if you approved any of those designs, you are a lunatic. Next time on Again With This, Schmob gets a backstory, Brooke's dad gets an idea, Matt gets a crappy offer, and Jane gets cold feet. You should get a double shot of Maalox on board before you check out our visual aids. For this and every other episode of Again With This, they're on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you could find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And our Patreon won't punch you in the gut. There's tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content there, including our recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast. That's at patreon.com/againwiththis. Join today. I'm crazy sister Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Runway Power Play Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Miami Mafioso David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
I am so sorry all this is happening to you.
It's shocking, really.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains August 15th through the 18th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.